Diversion Audio.
Rat Race got you down?
Stars, the hottest, biggest
When there's something strange on your TV screen, who are you going to call?
The shows we watched!
Yay! Yes, carve your pumpkin, bob your apple, and stuff yourself with Reese's Cups. It's the Shows We Watched Halloween Special!
They were just using Halloween to get candy!
Who cares?
I'm gonna be 40? Trick-or-treating at 40?
What are they spending?
Do I have free candy?
Where
I'm 40 years old! I want free candy!
You know what? Not everybody knows your rules, Larry.
We were on the break!
Well, what's the show about? It's about nothing.
And then you're ready?
Marsha. Oh my god, they killed Penny.
I am Mark from Mark. No. That's what she said.
Hello and welcome to the Shows We Watched with me, Emily Johnston.
And me, James King, and it's a very simple premise for this week's Halloween special.
Oh yeah, it's our favourite Halloween-themed TV episodes this week.
Oh, there are so many of them, aren't there? So many. It could almost be a whole podcast series. I think because of the costumes and the parties and the ghosts and ghouls and the tricks and treats, Halloween is such a good setting for comedy, for drama as well, but especially for sitcoms.
All right, we have to temper this a bit though for time.
Yeah.
So we can each choose three favorites, and I'm going to let you start with your three.
Okay, three favorite Halloween episodes. Right, okay. I will start off with a bit of Curb Your Enthusiasm, one of my favorite shows. So we'll go to season 2, episode 3, brilliantly titled Trick or Treat. Now, this being Larry David, of course, he has to do a Halloween episode slightly differently. He's not just going to celebrate it like everyone else, because he doesn't really celebrate much, Larry David, let's be honest. Apart from, you know, getting one over on his enemy, but he doesn't really celebrate much. So a lot of this episode actually is a fairly sort of standard Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. A lot of textbook Larry laughs. So, you know, he deals with the usual issues. He deals with Judaism because he's accused of being a bad Jew because he listens to Wagner music. And he deals with disability. Larry doesn't have the guts to tell his friend who's in a wheelchair that he plays golf because he thinks it will offend him. So these awkward moments that we know and love about Larry David, awkward flirtations, awkward ordering off menu in a restaurant, an awkward argument about the invention of the Cobb salad. Some lovely awkward moments, but there is this Halloween element to it as well. Here's the problem. Larry thinks that if you open the door to trick-or-treaters and they're like clearly older teenagers, 16, 17 years old, they haven't even bothered to dress up in fancy dress costume. Larry says, no, I'm not going to give you treats. That's a con. And he gets his house TP'd as a result. This is a great example of Larry being a stickler for his rules. It's a great example of his logic. Now, of course, Cheryl, his long-suffering wife, is shouting, who cares? She says it over and over again. Who cares?
Yeah.
It's like my mum with my dad. Who cares, Michael? You know, in her world, she'd just give everyone candy. She doesn't have these rules. She doesn't have this logic. But Larry does, and he ends up being labelled a bald asshole. And it's genius, I think, because we can kind of see how his brain is working. We can kind of see his logic. And there is some logic to, well, hang on, trick or treating, isn't it? The deal is you entertain me in a way by dressing up and saying happy Halloween and being fun, and I reward you.
Yeah, that's very true.
With candy.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing that, and if you're clearly too old to do it, why should I give you anything?
Yeah.
But I guess it's missing the kind of warmth and happiness of the occasion.
Well, it's just classic Larry David, isn't it? That he just takes a situation that most people would ignore and he just like sticks a red hot poker in it.
Yes. Whereas Cheryl just goes with the flow. And that, of course, is the joy of their relationship.
Yeah.
Is that I don't think he's ever just gone with the flow in his life.
He's incapable. But that is actually a brilliant showcase of of exactly what Larry David is. Because of course, most human beings on this planet, if two kids who are older teenagers come to your door, you're just like, okay, take the Snickers bar and go. Like,
and of course, the element we often forget about trick-or-treating is that it is trick or treat. So if there's no treat, you will get tricked.
Yeah, and he did.
And he did get, there's a lot of toilet paper.
And they wrote bald asshole on his house. Like, I often wondered about that episode. If that was, I would be a lot more upset if someone spray painted
I think he's
vulgarity
used to it, isn't
on
he?
My front door.
I think Larry is used to having people abuse him by now.
Or he's so filthy rich, so he's like, oh, we'll just have that taken care of this afternoon. But it wasn't, they walked out and the big surprise for both of them, of course, was the teepeeing.
Yeah.
And then they turned around and the big surprise for me was what was written on the door. So I thought that was brilliant.
There's another bit of teepeeing in my, have you ever done that, by the way?
Oh, I'm not going to say yes or no.
That's
such a
yes.
Because I know my mom and dad are going to listen
to this. It's such a yes, because if it was a no, you'd just say no.
I'm pleading the fifth as an American citizen.
There's more teepeeing in my second favourite Halloween episode. So we go over to another of my favourites, Parks and Recreation, Season 2, Episode 7, Greg Pikaitis, where we see Leslie Knope, the brilliant Amy Poehler. She's in real Dirty Harry mode in this one, isn't she? She is taking her job very seriously. And that in itself is always a gag. And that's kind of at the heart of Parks and Rec. Mm. How seriously she takes her job.
That's brilliant.
Way too seriously. At one point in this, she's compared to a serial killer because she's so intense. And she takes it as a compliment. She likes that comparison. But this is primarily about Leslie on October 31st stalking this high school kid called Greg Pikaitis. Which is a brilliant name. It sounds
so
like an illness. It's
sounds
fantastic.
Like an STD.
Exactly. I've got a touch of the old Greg Pikaitis. You can get an ointment for that. It's fine. It'll clear up. Now, she claims that Greg, every year on Halloween, trashes one of Pawnee's statues. And this year, she's determined to catch him. Mm. And it's hilarious just how much she hates him, how much she loathes this boy. He's just a boy. Mm. She wants to waterboard him. But she hates him because he doesn't respect the rules.
Yeah.
And she's a real stickler for the rules, as
we
know.
And he gets away with it.
And he gets away with it. And she hates that she hates that casual rebelliousness that he has. But the funny thing is that more uptight she gets, when she does interrogate him, he's just so laid back about it. And that just winds her up all the more.
Yeah.
It winds her up that he's so chilled.
Yeah.
You also get a nice interrogation scene featuring Chris Pratt, who of course plays Andy. And Burt Macklin is this regular alter ego, isn't he? Who he pretends to be throughout Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
Burt Macklin, the FBI interrogator. Very funny scene between Greg and Chris Pratt as Burt Macklin. There is another storyline going on. There's a Halloween party, Anne's Halloween party, and you've got Ron dressed as a pirate, and it's fun. But the Greg Pikaitis story, the teenage criminal mastermind versus Leslie Knope, the bureaucrat, that's what's so brilliant about this episode. And the payoff at the end, oh, it's a peach. It is just perfect.
Remind me of the...
Well, we always wonder how does Greg do this?
Are you going to give it away?
No, I'm just saying that we do find out how Greg does it.
Okay, and it is quite brilliant, actually. Sorry, I just had a total flashback.
Leslie, the guy is a genius. He's a teenage criminal mastermind.
I will say, without ruining it, that I do remember watching that going, God, that kid deserves every accolade he gets for pulling that off. Like, that was some dedication.
He's got a name that sounds like an STD, but he's got brains. That's the main thing.
He's got a brain that thinks like the FBI.
And I'm going to end with a bit of Charlie Brown, actually. I feel that every holiday season and major event throughout the year, we should have a Charlie Brown moment. It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Is the Halloween special, first aired October 27th, 1966 on CBS. And you have the sort of the holy trinity of the Charlie Brown shows making this. So Bill Melendez, who's the director, of course, Charles M. Schulz, who is the writer, and that brilliant music by Vince Guaraldi, that fantastic jazz music. And right from the start, this looks gorgeous. Right from the start, you see like a pink sun, you see a pink sky rather, and the low sun and the fallen leaves. And just like within about 20 seconds, you are in the fall. You are in autumn. You are in October. It's so stylish. And like a lot of the Charlie Brown specials, it's essentially just a sort of collection of skits. And you get the Snoopy Red Baron stuff, and you get some Sally and Charlie with the football stuff. Yeah. And you get Linus.
Oh, Linus.
I think I was Linus. Oh. You were Sally, right?
He was always, well, I mean, I didn't want to be.
Linus waiting for the Great Pumpkin, because he kind of imagines this sort of Easter Bunny type figure, Santa Claus type figure called the Great Pumpkin that's going to arrive on Halloween.
Oh, when he writes the letter, my heart just bursts.
I do find my heart bursting quite a lot watching shows like this.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that this was way back in the era when if you went to a Halloween party and we see a nice, you know, fancy dress Halloween party, you could essentially, if you're a kid, just put on a white sheet with a couple of holes and you'd be a, like a ghost. Yeah. That's all you needed to do.
Or a raccoon hat.
maybe a mask, a witch mask with a hooked nose. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
And now we pay so much attention to the fancy dress costumes.
It's so true. But
I think Heidi Klum and Seal ruined it. You know?
You should suggest I do this for the next Halloween. Just go simple, guys.
Yeah. And what I love about all these specials, these Charlie Brown specials, because of course there are many of them, is that they're so good at seasons. They're so good at holidays. You get an Easter one, you get a Christmas one, and just capturing the magic of childhood at those times of year. So the other ones I've mentioned, Curb and Parks and Rec, obviously a bit more adult, a bit more knowing, a bit more cheeky, but there's an innocence about Charlie Brown, isn't there? And yes,
and
they kind of
classic as well.
Classic.
Yeah.
And I think that they're that style of the kids speaking in an adult way, because they're almost like mini philosophers, aren't they? Some of the things that they say.
They are.
And Charlie especially has like the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Yeah.
But there is still that really naive innocence about it. So.
But I'm really, when you sent over your list of your three episodes, I was really surprised that this was on there. And excuse my naivety on this one, but it didn't occur to me that that would be something that would be big over here. Any of the Charlie Browns, actually.
Well, I'd say the biggest ones are the Christmas ones.
Right.
Although I do remember the Easter Beagle one as well, which obviously is the Easter special with Snoopy as the Easter Beagle. But no, they're not as big over here as they are in the States. But I think that's why I liked them growing up, because they had a kind of foreign quality about them.
Where did you watch it then?
They were shown.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think in the States, if I'm right, they're just like a regular thing. They're almost like part of the fabric.
It's like launching the season.
Yeah,
I can remember watching the Halloween. And so when you were just describing the autumnal opening, for me, I have such a visceral response to that, because that almost was it was around the same sort of time of going back to school and, you know, autumn is coming, and that was sort of the opening of the season, the whole kicking the leaves up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was my childhood. And so watching that, obviously, as a youth, you don't understand. You just think, oh, it's Snoopy, it's great.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then as an adult, you can flip back into those scenarios and think, this really is just like flipping open a scrapbook of my childhood. And so actually it's so much, I was so happy when you chose that, but I was so pleasantly surprised that it was something that also was watched by anyone outside of America. Maybe that's just me being a closed-minded American over there being like, nothing else happens anywhere else. But I was just so happy to see it on the list, James.
Well, we're going to be talking about your list coming up. Emily's three favorite Halloween episodes here on the shows we watched. Plus, the Addams Family are, of course, Halloween icons. We know all about Angelica Houston and Christopher Lloyd and Christina Ricci from the 90s movie, what they did next. Whatever happened, though, to Jimmy Workman, a.k.a. Pugsley Addams? The answer's coming up. Listening to the shows we watched with me, James King.
And me, Emily Johnston.
Whatever happened to Jimmy Workman, little Jimmy Workman, who played Pugsley Addams in the 90s movie, The Addams Family.
Worst name ever.
In his, Pugsley or Jimmy Workman?
Pugsley.
Well, listen, you know, they were kind of ghoulish, weren't they? And monstrous.
But he was a bit pudgy, so I always thought that was like I don't know. Maybe that's just me and my own weight issues coming up.
Well, no, I mean, I guess that the original Charles Addams illustrations, that's how he looked with his little stripy T-shirt, didn't he? And there have been several actors who played him in the original TV show, the 60s TV show.
Mm.
Unfortunately, the guy's not around anymore, but he had the brilliant name of Ken Weatherwax.
Oh my gosh.
And then the most recent Pugsley, because we've had an animated version of the Addams Family more recently, a couple of movies, is voiced by Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things, who really doesn't look like Pugsley Addams at all. But I guess he does have that Stranger Things slightly sort of terrifying connection.
Wait, so that's animated?
Yeah, that's the animated
version.
And what
does the animated character look like?
He looks like you'd expect Pugsley. Him to look like.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But the one that I remember is the guy from the 90s movies. Mm. And this is Jimmy Workman.
Such a cutie.
Now, his older sister went to audition for the role of Wednesday.
Okay.
Didn't get it. But right. Jimmy was spotted because he was with her. And that's how he got the role. That's how he was cast. Oh, God, which has got to hurt.
That had to be a bad car ride home.
And he's now 42 years old. He works behind the scenes in film production and transportation. Still very much involved in the industry. But he is the older brother of Ariel Winter, who played Alex on Modern Family.
No.
Yeah. I mean, quite significantly older.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to do the math quickly in my head. Like, what, 20 years older?
Yeah, but that is his younger sister. Her real name is Ariel Workman.
Wow, she went with Winter as her stage name, eh?
Yeah. So there you go. So that's what he's up to now. Are you talking about Modern Family?
I am, yeah. I think it's the last one on my list, but wait, you know, go ahead and throw that one out there. Ruin my list for me, James. Well, that will just be that everyone will just wait for the end then.
Yeah,
and you'll have to guess which Halloween episode I choose.
Well, I knew that you liked the show and I thought there was a connection. So yeah, Ariel Winter is Pugsley Addams' little sister. There you go.
I'm trying in my head to picture that, them as siblings, because actually when she starts on Modern Family, it would have been around the same age that he was in the Addams Family. And I'm in my head right now, I'm trying to piece those faces
You're
together.
You're picturing her in a stripy t-shirt.
Does she look like it?
So we know that Modern Family is going to be one of your faves. What about the other ones, Emily?
Okay, so we're going to start with How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Now this one's, I'm going to be a bit cheeky here. And I apologize because I know we had rules, only three episodes. But this is like a two episode thing, but it's the first episode and I'm going to casually mention the follow up. Okay.
Okay, explain.
So the first episode of this is from season one, episode 6. It's the first Halloween episode for How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
And it's called Slutty Pumpkin. Right?
Okay.
I mean, the name already. Yeah. I mean, instantly you're already like, okay, I know this is going to be in America.
It's funny, that's my nickname for my wife, but there we go. What a coincidence.
Oh, she's going to kill you. And it is basically, it just showcases the most romantic Ted. And we know, I mean, the whole show is based on Ted being this hopeless romantic.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's telling the story of how he met the mother of his children and his wife to his children. And you're in this lead up. And we're in season one, right? So I think at this point, when I first watched this episode, I thought, oh my God, the Slutty Pumpkin could be the one, because maybe this is just a one series, one season gig.
Yeah.
And we're getting towards the back end of it. So he's going to have to meet her eventually. And the whole thing revolves around him going to a rooftop party and he meets a woman dressed in this, I'm a slutty pumpkin costume.
I mean, essentially, she's just a pumpkin, isn't she, really?
She is, but I think they say in the show, with the right cutouts, is how they phrase it.
Fair enough, yeah.
And she pours a drink that apparently is her version of an alcoholic Tootsie Roll, and they fall in love, and she writes her number on a Kit Kat, and then he goes downstairs, puts the Kit Kat in Marshall's bowl that he's or puts it next to the bowl of candy, whatever. Anyway, the Kit Kat goes missing. Ted accosts the child to try and get it back. And then for the next, I think it was like 10 years. So you're hearing this in season one and you're seeing this Halloween unroll with the fourth year that he's standing on this rooftop terrace waiting for this girl to come back. He keeps thinking she's going to come back.
Yeah.
And you're really rooting for Ted because he's like, this is the woman of my dreams. I have to keep doing this.
And do we see who is the slutty pumpkin?
No, we just see the slutty pumpkin from behind.
Right, okay.
Which is why I have to mention the next episode.
Yeah.
Because, so, listener, obviously he doesn't meet the slutty pumpkin. Yeah. It ends on a note where he's sitting on the rooftop with Robin and everything's fine. And then you think, well, that's the end of the slutty pumpkin.
Yeah.
Right? Aha. It is not the end of the Slutty Pumpkin. Fast forward 6 seasons to season 7, episode 8.
Right.
And the Slutty Pumpkin is revealed.
Wow, that's a slow burn, isn't it?
I mean, I feel like the writers must have been like, what should we do this week? It's Halloween, let's bring back the Slutty Pumpkin. Or yeah. they might have just had a well-placed call from a very big celebrity saying she wants to be in How I Met Your Mother. Right. I don't know.
And who is that well-placed celebrity?
Katie Holmes.
Oh, it's you. Listeners,
God,
listeners, we should point out that Emily lives in Dawson's Creek.
Well, I live in what James likes to think is Dawson's Creek. It does look remarkably like Dawson's Creek. It is.
Listen, don't ruin the image. You live in Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, but there was no Dawson for me, sadly.
No. There was Creek, but no Dawson.
No Creek, but
no, well, plenty no, of Creek, but no Dawson. Yeah. So Katie Holmes is revealed as the Slutty Pumpkin.
She is. And the whole thing actually takes kind of a nice spin because it's a bit of a lesson learner that sometimes we can put too much on the idea of love. And that when we do that, it can put too much pressure on things. And then it unravels greatly.
Right. Who would do that?
James, I'm going to strangle you. So basically what happens, and of course this is, it was, I was watching this at a rather inopportune time.
Sensitive time in your emotional existence.
It is, yeah. Although watching Katie Holmes sing One Week by Bare Naked Ladies.
Brilliant. She's great, isn't she?
She's amazing.
I think we should give Katie Holmes more respect than we do. She's so associated with Tom Cruise.
She is, yeah. But we forget that
I think she's very funny. I think she's really funny
she's
in this episode.
Funny. I thought she was amazing.
Yeah.
And really a great actress, and the way that it unfolds at the end, and I won't ruin it in case anyone hasn't seen it, and it is an episode worth watching.
Yeah.
The first one's my favorite because I think it's a little bit more on the romantic side, and the second one is a lesson learned.
Yeah.
So a little bit harsh to watch, but it's a beautiful pairing. So if you're looking for something on a night to watch on Halloween, those two fit perfectly together. And if you've seen all seasons, you can go back and just sort of have a walk down memory lane.
So where do we go next then?
Okay, so we go somewhere completely different. We head to the office.
Ah, okay. Yes, to Dunder Mifflin.
Yes, to Dunder Mifflin. And Michael's paper mache head on his shoulder, which
that's his Halloween outfit, isn't it?
That's his Halloween costume. It is actually, I think, voted like one of the best Halloween episodes the world over when people talk about TV episodes. And when we first decided to do the show, it instantly popped up in my head as an episode that I would want to talk about because I find it such an interesting storyline that they start the whole show with this idea that Michael has to let go one of the members of staff. And you see all of these members of staff dressed ridiculously and you think, so they're all going to have to go beg for their job wearing those outfits.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It's such that contrast of how they look versus the seriousness of the situation.
It's just brilliant writing. It really is. And the cast is brilliant and it's just carried impeccably. And it is a classic episode for a reason. And it's just because it hits so many different points. And it maybe doesn't have as much of the festive feel, but I think it has a more realistic feel. And if you're an adult and you're working in an office in America and you're talking about Halloween, then these are the sort of things that you think about. So,
and then actually a really beautiful moment right at the end with Trick or Treaters. And it almost kind of changes the whole atmosphere of the episode. The mood, for me, it changed the whole mood of the episode. It was a really sweet, I'm not going to say what it is, but it's just a really sweet moment.
And your opinion of Michael.
Exactly.
Like, we don't have to say what happened, but I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And I feel like that's why that show is so good, because it can make him out to be such a goofball idiot that you have no respect for. And then I don't think there was a dry eye in the house when
that's a very interesting difference to the UK show, because we never saw where he lived in the UK show.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that.
I think that generally speaking, the character that Ricky Gervais played, David Brent, was kind of a bit more likable in his daily life. He was still a goofball and still an idiot, but a bit more likable than Michael Scott.
I would agree with that.
Whereas Michael is a bit colder.
But harsher as well.
There are little moments like the finale of that Halloween episode that just change your opinion of
it. They're so beautiful.
Yeah.
But interestingly, I feel like that carries nicely into Modern Family.
Yes, we talked to Ariel Winter earlier. One of the stars.
Which I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah, she was in a cage, I think, for that episode. But when we talk about the workplace, of course, Mitchell, is it a Spider-Man costume at work? And there's this beautiful moment of him overhearing people talking. This is season 2, episode 6 of Modern Family.
Yep.
And Mitchell overhears people talking in the hall. He's just started a new job and they're talking about what they're going to wear on Halloween. He's like, oh, great. Everybody dresses up for Halloween. And so only 2 people show up dressed for Halloween. And Mitchell comes in this great, like, muscly Spider-Man costume. And luckily, it's just a beautiful moment of, obviously he gets there and he's like, oh God, I can't be wearing this. And you watch this whole thing unfold. And again, it's in an office setting. And as an adult for Halloween, it's addressing how Halloween is so different for us as adults as it was as kids.
Yeah. It's not Charlie Brown anymore, is it?
No, it's very much, if you're still indulging in Halloween, somehow you're a child and grown-ups don't do such things. And it's a beautiful moment with that. But for me, I think with Modern Family, where the reason I chose this as my Halloween episode was because of what happens in the home with the whole family when they're doing the haunted house. And for me, I just think that's so, so beautiful. And the opening scene of this Halloween episode is one of my favorites. I don't think I laughed or like shrieked sad at anything as when, was it... Claire and Phil. So Claire is downstairs chopping something up for breakfast and she chops off her fingers and the kid comes in and he's like so used to his mom loving Halloween. He's like, yeah, whatever, mom. And then he goes to like grab the hand and the hand actually is his dad's. It's under, like, it's a play hand, but then the whole thing just unfolds beautifully and you're like, oh God, this is going to be such a good episode. And the whole thing about Modern Family, obviously, is that we see so much reflected. There's still something you'll see,
yeah,
no matter what family you come from, there's a reflection of your own in that family. And so you see them all come together for the haunted house and you see the passion that doesn't exist there. And then one of them gets really upset and the passion comes to console. And it's just a really beautiful coming together moment. And I love it. It warms my heart to watch that episode.
I know the answer to this question, which is why I'm asking it to you. Emily, okay, what would be your ideal, your dream Halloween costume?
Oh, God. You know the answer.
Yeah, because you posted about it on Instagram.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, yes.
Yes.
I just remembered.
Yes.
Wow, you're paying more attention than I am these days. So my dream Halloween costume is from a George Michael video. It's Thierry Mugler. It's basically... what do you call that? A motorcycle?
Yeah.
Motorcycle frontage?
Yeah, the handlebars.
Yeah. So, you know, it's from the Too Funky video.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and I love it. And I can't believe you remembered that. Oh, God.
But it's never happened. This is just a dream. No. It's a dream still to be realized.
I'm pretty sure someone would hospitalize me. If they saw me walking down the street in that outfit, they'd be like, ma'am, we know you think London, you can wear anything, but not here.
Listen, I'd just go for Pugsley Adams in a stripy t-shirt. It's a lot easier, isn't it?
We know what we're doing.
A lot easier. Happy Halloween, Emily.
Happy Halloween, James. If you'd like to send us an email, a voicemail, a comment, an idea for the show, or just want to say hi, our email address is theshowswewatched@gmail.com. That's theshowswewatched@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you and may use your message in a future show.
And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Diversion Pods. Of course, we are on those as well, aren't we? I'm James King Movies.
We are, and I'm at Emily Jane Johnston.
And The Shows We Watched is a production of Diversion Audio.
This season was written, researched, and hosted by us, Emily Johnston and James King.
Our supervising producer and sound mixer is Mark Francis, based on a concept by John Tuttle.
And our head of marketing is Erica Farmer, and the original theme music is by Tyler Cash.
The Shows We Watched was recorded at Vox Pod Studios in London and executive produced by Jacob Bronstein, Mark Francis, and Scott Waxman for Diversion Audio. You're listening to The Shows We Watched with me, James King.
Oh God, can you do it again? I'm so sorry. I was just about to cough.
Keep that bit in.
Sorry, one more time. One more time.
Diversion Audio.